When she was found dead in the woods, it immediately looked as if she had taken her own life. But her husband's son had died in exactly the same way. Unlucky coincidence or proof of murder? This is the story of Emily Noble, the woman whose husband was accused of staging her death. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. When Emily Noble started making news, she had already been missing for 3 months. The 52-year-old was known to be sensitive and kind-hearted, a little bit of a hippie and the sort of person you'd refer to as a kindred spirit. She worked for the Department of Medicaid for the state of Ohio and had met her husband online in December 2015. Family said she made friends easily and laughed often. Emily lived in Westerville, a suburb north of Columbus, which weirdly seems to pride itself on being the place where prohibition started in the United States, but is now a designated outdoor refreshment area. Cheers. There weren't any clues about what happened to the missing Emily, no obvious signs of kidnapping, nor a fight, or something of that nature. She was last seen on her birthday, May 24th, 2020, when she and her husband spent the day collecting water from a nearby spring, having a picnic, and going out to bars in town. Someone who lived around them said he saw her at home at 7 or 8 p.m. Her husband said he stayed up late on his phone, and then she was simply missing when he woke up that morning. And although there was really no reason to suspect him of anything, it always looks bad when someone quote-unquote leaves, but without her keys and her wallet and her phone. The police searched the woods nearby from the beginning, but friends took it upon themselves to search again in August.
May 24th, her 52nd birthday, and the last time that Noble was seen alive. Clues or leads as to what happened are unraveling slowly. That's why these friends organized a search to find more.
Yeah, we're having people come out today, no dogs, no children, doing searches, social distance, work in groups. If you see anything, don't touch anything, just take pictures. Note where you're at so we can have the professionals come in and take it from there.
Doing what they can to find justice for Noble, but these friends know her enough to know.
If she was out there somewhere, she wouldn't let all of us worry about her for 12 weeks. She would have contacted someone by now.
The following month, three women out foraging found a body in the woods off County Line Road, hanging in a kneeling position from a honeysuckle tree near Emily's home. It was weird because police said that area had been searched 3 times, even using cadaver dogs. The local PD confirmed with dental records a few days later that it was, in fact, Emily. Though her body was very decomposed, there was a black USB cord around her neck that made it appear at first that she'd taken her own life. Her husband hosted a celebration of life months later, both to remember the day Emily disappeared and also, of course, her birthday. But it wasn't long before he was under arrest for her murder. 51-year-old Matthew Moore was picked up during a traffic stop on June 17, 2021, and charged with 2 counts of murder and 1 count of felonious assault. It turns out an autopsy had shown that Emily had fractures in her face and neck that made it seem like she had probably been strangled, a homicide. An Ohio State University skeletal lab had analyzed the findings, and a strangulation expert had confirmed them. A Westerville police lieutenant said the results were very clear. Moore had strangled Emily and then staged her body to look like she'd taken her own life. And what's even more interesting is that the local news station, WBNS 10 TV, discovered that only a year before Emily died, Moore's teenage son had also died. And the way he ended his life was the same way Emily's had been taken from her. Police said his was an actual hanging, not a faked one like Emily's. Moore was an unemployed former Las Vegas casino dealer who had inherited enough money when his mom died to stop working. And he said his arrest was a mistake, that he was innocent. He was held on $2.5 million bond.
He told reporters he did not kill his wife, but his neighbors believe the right man was arrested.
I breathed a sigh of relief. And why do you say that?
I didn't want this to be one of those cold cases that they finally discover the truth 10 years later, only because I knew her, you know, and we all did, and we just wanted justice.
WBNS interviewed Moore's ex-wife, who said Emily's death made her recall an incident where Moore was violent with her only 3 months into their marriage. And obviously, any kind of DV is bad, but the particular nature of this incident couldn't have looked worse for Moore. See, on New Year's Day, 2001, his ex says he choked her while she was pregnant. He allegedly pushed her, grabbed her neck, and told her, "You're done for," strangled her like Emily had been strangled. The case was later dismissed in court, and Moore and his ex remained in touch after their divorce. But she said he would pay if he was guilty in Emily's case, which isn't exactly the kind of support you usually see from loved ones in cases like this. In August 2021, Moore's defense was granted a delay in the upcoming trial so they could go through what they were calling the voluminous discovery. In the court of public opinion, though, the man had no chance. Before Emily's body had been found, Moore sent an email to the Vanished podcast for help drawing attention to her case. And their researchers said, "There are things that Matt said to me that I have never heard in an interview." Like, he talked about how Emily was so small but never got on a scale. He said she had pretty legs and great arms. Not the usual, she had a smile that would light up a room, but she was hot. The podcast also found it telling that he said Emily went missing on Labor Day when it was actually Memorial Day. Although I would argue that it could be a pretty honest mistake mixing up the names of those holidays. But the podcast also noted that Moore never joined a search party for Emily. He argued, "I'm searching still, and I'm just trying to find evidence, and that's why I'm talking to you right now." In August 2022, Moore went to trial, and the first thing the jury did was go on a little trip to see where Emily was found and how closely she lived nearby with Moore. They were also shown police body cam footage from the first officer to respond to the home and how Moore was immediately concerned that his wife had done something to hurt herself. Like, as soon as he realized Emily was missing, he seemed worried that she'd taken her own life.
Also today, jurors heard from Moore himself for the first time through body camera footage. They watched much of the 2.5 hours of footage from the officer who responded to Moore's 911 call to report his wife missing. During that time, Moore made at least 4 different mentions of his worry that something bad had happened to his wife, potentially even suicide. And he added that his own son had died by suicide.
I was gut feeling right here when my son died. I was thinking, at the worst case scenario, maybe she did something to herself.
Suicide, man, I don't know. I might have some did suicide. She was there to hurt herself. Like, there was something along those lines. Did they try to hide it?
Whether you believe Moore was actually concerned about his wife or faking it, both sides in the case agreed on one thing. Emily was no stranger to people around her choosing to take death into their own hands. Moore's son, as I mentioned, ended his life in a nearby park, and Emily's first husband also died from self-inflicted wounds. I imagine Moore's defense was trying to show that the idea of intentional death would have been familiar to Emily, while the state probably wanted to cast more suspicion on Moore for his son dying in the same way Emily did. Emily's sister testified that Moore asked her to speak to the media and the police on his behalf, like he wanted to create distance with himself. And there could be a reasonable explanation for that, like he wanted to grieve privately. But one very interesting thing revealed at trial was the exact spot where Emily's body was found was actually never searched by the police. Yes, the area had been searched 3 times, including with bloodhounds and cadaver dogs, but a police lieutenant said miscommunication caused the specific spot to be ignored. The cadaver dogs searched along a bike path but didn't go into the woods. Moore had actually been the one to encourage the police to search that area because Emily liked to forage there. That same day of the trial, a friend testified that Emily had bruises on her arm when they saw each other for the last time. She said she told Emily to her face that she was concerned about her relationship with Moore. A neighbor also testified that Moore asked him to go to the store for cigarettes and alcohol the day after Emily disappeared. And when he realized Moore was smoking in the house, something Emily didn't allow, it made him think Moore knew Emily wasn't coming home. The jury got to hear Moore's police interview where he claimed, "Guys, I did not hurt my wife. I know I did not hurt her. I didn't do anything. So the only other thing that I can think of is that she did something to herself." But they also heard him say, "I loved her." Loved in the past tense. A police detective also said the text messages between the two leading up to her death were very up and down, but mostly down. Moore and Emily talked about Moore's sorrow over his son dying. She didn't like his drinking. Moore asked her at one point if she wanted to divorce him. In one text, Emily said, "You might want to find out what I heard you talk about last night on the phone." It was never made clear what that was about. So you might be surprised to learn that it only took the jury 3 hours to acquit Matthew Moore. Certainly everything leading up to the trial made it seem like he would probably be found guilty. There was the alleged choking of his ex, the autopsy that showed strangulation, the fact that people were saying he didn't help with the search for Emily. But at trial, it became clear that the actual evidence just wasn't there. Both sides agreed that Emily had known too much tragedy for one person. In the 90s, she had friends who died from AIDS. Her parents died in different horrific accidents a year apart. Her first husband and her stepson both took their own lives. The state said Emily had overcome trauma so many times. She'd overcome so many terrible things in her life, and meeting Moore was the most terrible thing of all. They said she even told people, she had assured them, she would never end her own life. But to me, that's exactly the thing that shows why Moore might be innocent. A person can only handle so much. Even with counseling for her depression, even when she seemed to be putting on a happy face for the people around her. The fact that Emily was out there promising her loved ones that she wouldn't leave them by taking her own life is so telling to me. People who don't have any ideations of that sort don't have to assure people that they won't do it. Yes, Moore was sitting at home, unemployed and drinking and being sad over his son, but he was at the very least texting Emily to try to stay positive because she needed it. She needed to hear that. The state had also tried to argue that Emily was too light to fracture her throat by hanging, but the defense said that she had quote-unquote fragile bones on account of a condition that causes low bone density. Like when Emily once broke her ankle, doctors had to insert pins to repair it. And a forensic anthropologist testified that neck bones specifically are dainty enough that she tells people not to push on them too hard. A defense expert said that in tests done with a crash test dummy, the branch Emily was found on was strong enough to hold a body of her size. And what had looked to one expert like signs of a beating before her death turned out to be old healed fractures from a broken nose Emily had in 1983. The methods of this expert have since been called into question. The defense said the state's case was incomplete, that mental health isn't as easy as saying they seem happy, and that the idea of Moore staging Emily's death was total speculation. I'm honestly not sure what the state thought they had that would convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. The police investigation wasn't even seen as decent because they had left behind teeth and bones at the crime scene initially and had to go back for them. One juror says not a single one of them ever pushed for a guilty verdict. She said it was the body cam footage that first convinced her of Moore's innocence, the way he seemed cooperative with police and genuinely distraught about his wife's disappearance. The juror isn't sure who killed Emily, but it doesn't escape her that Emily had a lot of sadness in her life. She feels confident that no matter what, Moore didn't kill his wife. Her book is coming out on November 19th. Moore already has his own book, An Attempt to Clear His Name with Those Who Think He Got Away with Murder. He says he did search for Emily, just not with the police. And honestly, that rang pretty hollow for me at first, but there's just one thing. Moore says he brought missing person flyers to Black Lives Matter rallies after Emily disappeared. And I can see a world where a person who goes to those rallies may not want to work side by side with the police. Also, I'm not sure I would want to go into the woods looking for a body at all if my teenage son had been found that way. I don't know, you'll have to let me know what you think about that. Moore said being arrested for his wife's death never let him properly come to terms with her leaving, and his emotional breakdown at being found not guilty was the start of his true grieving process. This is a man who lost one son to a sudden illness, another son to hanging, and then his wife to the same thing. I hope he is innocent and that he finds sympathy and peace in the remainder of his life. It certainly appears from the way he still talks about Emily on Facebook that he loves her very much. Looking through Emily's old Facebook page, I'm struck by her love of the outdoors. Her last photo was of a sunset right by her home in an album called Nature Therapy. On a photo of a tree, she wrote, "My next door neighbor's tree is perfect, full of birds and bees, and it smells like roses. It creates a bubble of warmth, and its petals blow onto me while I'm gardening. It is poetry in motion." Wherever she is, I hope Emily is basking in a bubble of warmth. Thank you to WBNS for their extensive reporting. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.